All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, allegedly anyway. Hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense for this Monday, February 13th, 2023. Another beautiful day on Lake Wissota, and what a busy Monday we have for you here. Today we have interviews with two of the four candidates for a seat on the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Coming up at 6:15, we'll talk to Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell, and at 7:15, we'll visit with Milwaukee County Judge Janet Protasewicz. Also, it's Motherhood Monday, so Nicole Slavin and Kate Walsh of Motherhood for Good will discuss what busy moms and parents need to know about the important issues in this state Supreme Court race. And in our Civic Media homeroom that we do near the end of each of our visits around 7:50 every morning, Terry Bell joins us with the three things you need to know to start the week. And a reminder, you can catch those candidate interviews also as a podcast. We turn our radio show into podcasts, one episode per hour. So this episode will have the one with Judge Mitchell and next hour with Judge Protasewicz. You can always reach the show at 715-388-7155 or 844-967-2789. How do I know this? Because it's scrolling right there on the screen, or I can also, you know, add, yeah, we've got new toys to play with here today.
It's so fancy.
I know. And so I have to click buttons to let Aaron into the room. And there we go. There's Aaron waving at everybody. There's just so much to remember here. But there it is. There we've got it coming up and everything. Aaron Zommers, how are you? How was your weekend?
Doing pretty well. I had a nice weekend. Got to spend some time with my family. One little highlight is that my niece, Gracie, made me another painting. It's of my birthday party. So it's a bunch of people wearing like party hats. And I wear compression socks. You can instantly tell which one is mine because it has socks.
Well, that, you know, you don't see that very often in our, and how old is she?
She is four.
Okay. You don't see a lot of four-year-old artists, you know, paying that much attention to detail. So good on her.
You have a good weekend.
Dara. Yeah, it was a very busy one getting set up to all the graphics that are necessary to get this done here, but we got it all done. And then, so to that end, folks that are watching us on Facebook or Twitter going, why is there another window between you two? Well, that's the control board, so we actually get out on the radio. But you'll see Aaron over on the right side of the screen controlling that board. So which do I want to ask first, your impression on the game or the commercials? And, of course, I'm talking about the Super Bowl.
I mean, either, really.
Mm-hmm.
How about game? Let's talk about that.
Yeah, because that'll be shortest. I paid the least amount of attention to that, so I thought it was good.
Yeah, the Eagles were looking really good for a while, and then I'm thinking that maybe the Chiefs caused enough temporary brain damage by how they were playing and like throwing the Eagles around that it stunned them into losing.
It could be that. It was a good game all around.
It was.
Again, I didn't pay a ton of attention to it because, again, it doesn't really matter to me. Didn't care which team won. I thought that Jalen Hurts, the quarterback for the Eagles, had a phenomenal game and almost deserved a win just for that effort. Three rushing touchdowns. That had never been seen before. But, you know, he made some mistakes as well. And Patrick Mahomes, he's the veteran by comparison. And, I mean, he's the leader of this new generation of quarterbacks, if you will, as people like, you know, Tom Brady exit the scene, Aaron Rodgers. You wonder, did Aaron Rodgers actually see the game, or was he in the dark all of this time, sitting in a dark room someplace?
Somehow I think he's going to want to have watched the Super Bowl.
Well, okay. Then I don't know when his 4-day retreat was. I don't even know if it was a real thing, but, you know, we'll assume he didn't sit in the dark for this one, maybe. We're going to post a question of the week over at Up North News later this week, and we're going to ask about tipping. We've got a story about that and how some places are saying, some people are saying that, you know, the 15% tip for service should actually be raised. Meanwhile, some other businesses are moving away from tipping altogether because, you know, they're raising prices so that they can pay their workers better, you know, but most don't. And that's why folks are talking about, you know, the need for improving on the 15% tip. Do you typically tip 20% or more? What do you think about places that put the tip jar on the counter? So we're not talking about table service, but just ordering something at the counter and there's a tip jar there. So look, be on the lookout for our Facebook post later about that. And leave us your comments on that question of the week. A reminder that the primary election here in Wisconsin is a week from tomorrow. It's on February 21st. Make a plan to vote. And if you need more information, go to myvote.wi.gov. The Milwaukee Bucks have a 10-game winning streak heading into the new week. They beat the LA Clippers Friday night, 119-106. They beat the LA Lakers on Thursday. Their next game is at home tomorrow night against the Boston Celtics. The Bucks have won 12 of their last 13 games. Number 10 Marquette beat Georgetown on Saturday. That puts the Golden Eagles alone in first place in the Big East. And then there's the men's basketball team for the University of Wisconsin. The Badger men lost at Nebraska Saturday in overtime, 73-63. Not a pretty game. The Badgers watched the Huskers go on a 12-0 run in the extra period to close out the game. The Badgers at one point in the second half had been up by 17 and end up losing by 10 in overtime, and they will host Michigan tomorrow. All right, we're going to take a break, and then coming up next, we're going to start our interviews. I've spoken with both Judge Everett Mitchell of Dane County. You'll hear that interview next, and then an hour away from that at 7:15, my interview with Judge Janet Protasiewicz. We have reached out as well to the two conservative candidates, Dan Kelly, the former justice, and Jennifer Duro, the Waukesha County judge. We have not received any confirmation back from them yet on interviews, but this all gets started with Judge Everett Mitchell coming up next on Up North News Radio. Judge Everett Mitchell, good morning. Thank you for joining us on Up North News Radio.
Good morning, Pat. Thank you so much, man, for having me. I'm so excited to be here today.
Well, it's our pleasure. We know we've been talking about this election nonstop for weeks now. You've been thinking about it and then campaigning in it for a lot longer. And I certainly want to get to the reasons why you chose to run, why you would be a good justice. But because we haven't had this opportunity to share your full story with our listeners, and we've got a little extra time here, let me just turn things over to you and ask you to share just a little bit of biographical information about yourself when you're introducing yourself out there beyond Dane County. What do you tell folks?
I tell them my story. I tell them I grew up the son of a single mother and that I experienced a lot of trauma growing up. I didn't know my father. And so by the time I got ready to graduate from high school, I experienced so much trauma trying to protect my sister from an abuser that I was functionally illiterate. And I graduated from high school and I had taken a job bagging groceries. And so as I was getting ready to go take that job, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
As I was getting ready to take that job, I got a call from a small school called Jarvis Christian College. And they gave me a chance to come trial college. And they said, you know, I was like, well, I got a job bagging groceries. And they said to me, well, why don't you come trial college? If it don't work out, you can always go back to bagging groceries. So I put all my clothes in the trunk and I went down to the small college and failed everything. Ended up making like a 1.5 in midterms. And as I was putting on my bag, getting ready to go back home and take up my job, two teachers, Ms. Margaret Bell and Daisy Wilson, pulled me to the side and said, Everett, you're a diamond in the rough. And we don't want to see you give up on your dream of a college education. So they taught me how to read at 18 years old, taught me how to study, taught me the discipline of going to the library from 5 p.m. to 10 p.m. every day. And I went from making a 1.5 to a 4.0. And then that allowed for me to transfer to my dream college, Morehouse College in Atlanta, Georgia, where I got degrees in mathematics and religion, and then transfer to Princeton, where I got two degrees in religious studies, and then eventually make my way to the University of Wisconsin-Madison Law School, where I earned my Juris Doctorate as a single father, working full-time on law review and still graduating in 3 years. So that is a part of my biography, where I came from and where we can start talking about the law and justice.
Sure, but let me jump on the part about essentially the turnaround. One of our favorite guests here, Dr. Pat McBride, talks about coming from this family with a dysfunctional, you know, both parents were alcoholics. He was a ball boy for the Brewers and then the Bucks and the Packers, and they saw something in him. And even though he almost washed out a couple of times, you know, he was able to turn things around. And my point for bringing that up is that for almost anybody, there is that teacher, that mentor. It doesn't always have to be a parent. There is just somebody out there that can be that person for somebody's life. Do you get to see that now more often from the bench in Dane County?
Well, yeah, because I become that kind of caring person for a lot of our young people. As a presiding judge over our juvenile division, I spend a lot of time in my cases working with our young people. And I promise you, Pat, there's nothing more precious than the children of our state. And so I often tell the young people that I'm not only your judge, I'm also your reflection. So when you look at me on the bench, I may be the one in the black robe and I may want to have the titles, but I started just like you started. And with people who believed in me, like I'm going to believe in you, I'm not going to throw your future away. I'm going to figure out what resources we can put together, what package we can put together to give you a chance, give you at least a crossroad to be able to make a different choice in your life. And that's what I do. I work hard to give them choices so they can have a different direction for their future.
I am not in any way trying to denigrate the Wisconsin Supreme Court or any state Supreme Court, but you are having that day-to-day interaction making a difference. And I think anybody would look at a Supreme Court and say, well, that's a rather dry job. There's less interaction. Obviously, there's a lot that it's very important. But in making that step from this level of court to another, what made you decide to run? What makes you say to yourself, this is the place where you can make a difference next?
It's because, our state deserves a justice that really reflects the diversity and ideas of our entire state. You know, my mentor and judicial mentor was Justice Shirley Abrahamson, and nobody would say that she just made it a dry job. She was all over the state talking to every type of constituent group, making sure that there's an impact and legacy left. And I think the fact that regardless of where you agree or not, she was the first woman to be able to be on the Supreme Court and look at the legacy she's left behind. The majority of us, Wisconsin Supreme Court, are women. Regardless of their ideological perspective, they're there. And I think for me, the impact to be able to judicial education, judicial budgeting, bringing together committees that could be able to solve bigger problems. Like just so recently, the Chief Justice pulled together a conversation on mental health. I don't see why we can't do the same thing for young people, talking about drugs and addictions and treatment courts and resources for our courts.
This race is a bit unusual, simply in that in our increasingly partisan environment out there, candidates, conservative and progressive, are talking probably a bit more specifically about issues instead of just, you know, using the usual key words of this or that. And I'm trying not to get too deep into the weeds on things like abortion or gerrymandering, but I just want to speak to the whole notion of how do you share your values about things, about life and about the law, without necessarily saying this is how I'm going to rule if a certain case comes before me. How do you balance that?
Yeah, see, there are two ways to do that. One is, I mean, everybody needs to know your values, right? As a circuit court judge, you always are using your values, like values of faith, values of equality, values of love, acceptance, integration, supporting all types of people. People need to know your values because when they vote for you, they need to know who you are. But secondly, we're lawyers. We're judges, right? We can analyze and criticize cases all day long. As I've said before, nobody's going to sit up here and say, Plessy versus Ferguson, was that a good decision? Most people say no. Why? Because they understood the implications of it at the time. So I think as a community, as a judge, as even as a candidate, you can say, you know, these particular decisions, I disagree with these decisions, but I'm going to tell you why, you know, and be able to articulate what constitutionally, legal standard, whatever it is, be able to articulate why you disagree or agree with a particular decision.
Well, and to that issue, you have just there cited a long ago case that helps frame your values in much the same way the conservative candidates have, whether talking about Roe v. Wade or Lawrence v. Texas, which allows same-sex couples not to be harassed by government, you know, in the privacy of their own home. So you get that shaping of values. You also get it in your story. You talked about yours. The two conservative candidates in the race, neither attended a Wisconsin school, but rather went to the college founded by the TV preacher Pat Robertson. Can you talk broadly about, you know, where you went to law school, where others go to law school, and the role that voters should take into consideration?
Well, I think, you know, I will always say this, you know, wherever you receive your education from is what you make out of your education, right? So I think, you know, there might be a lot of considerations that they went to a particular law school and it shaped their conservative views. That might be true. And that might have been the bent. It might have been a very deeply religious school. But the reality is what they have chosen to do off the bench. And I think my education at UW shaped me because the theme of UW is law in action. Right. What does a law look like and how do you put the law in action so it can work for people? And so most of us who gravitated to it at school are always looking to figure out different ways that the law can be put into some practical use and have practical implications for Wisconsinites.
Let me ask of the current makeup of the court. Is there a justice on there now that you would be a noted departure from and offer a different perspective compared to what the current composition of the court is?
Do I have an opposite?
I mean, you're running for an open seat. Essentially, I'm saying if you were running up against any of these justices, could you point to any one of them and say, there's a very clear difference here and explain why you would be a different choice than that justice?
Well, I would say that at least currently, I think I had a good discussion last evening with Justice Rebecca Bradley, who she was very thoughtful in talking about the WIS Politics Forum. And one of the things that we both agreed to is that we can disagree with how we interpret the law and how we see the law, but that doesn't mean we have to then divulge into a place where we're doing personal attacks to assault everyone's character, right? You can disagree with ideas, but you don't have to demonize individuals in order to move forward progress. And I think that sometimes the way that we have politics has entered into our discussion, we end up becoming more like politicians than arbitrators of the law.
We played an excerpt of your recent interview on Upfront from WISN, where you explained that part of the difference in fundraising is that, you know, you don't have, as you put it, a lot of wealthy elite donors. But we then also played a cut from former Justice Dan Kelly, who seemed to throw up his hands as if he has, you know, no control over the conservative, you know, big money that's coming into his race. This is something you won't be able to fix if elected. But what would you like to see fixed in the way that judicial races and specifically Supreme Court races are funded?
I want them to, I really would like, and if people have argued for this for years, I think we should go to a merit-based system. I think the fact that we are now is still running races that can outside money can influence demonstrates that we should not be in a position where we're having judges raise money and then ask us to then raise millions of dollars of money, and it's only millions of dollars of money just to get on TV. So you raise $1 million of money, taking money from everyday people, then just so you get on TV, that diminishes the capacity for us to be nonpartisan when we get on the bench. You get a merit-based system, we don't owe anybody anything because it's just based on our record and our merit versus then, you know, being concerned about whether or not you should have to recuse yourself or go out and chase endorsements, which don't want to allow for you to be balanced or reach out to the other spectrum because, you know, you might think that they don't have any votes for you.
Last question would be in being a justice for all of Wisconsin, and this could be said for anybody, wherever their hometown is, Dane County, Milwaukee County, Chippewa County, whatever the case may be. Any one person comes from one part of the state has to, you know, represent an entire state. So for folks here up north who are looking at, in this case, a Dane County judge and have heard about the things that you've done, but the question they then may then follow, what is it about you that folks up north feel would make you the best qualified choice for Supreme Court justice come April?
Man, you know, when I was up in St. Croix and I was talking to the voters up there, one of the things that they continued to believe in was, one, not only did they feel my story was important, but they felt like my commitment to having a conversation was also important as well, that I don't participate in demonizing individuals, that I really do try to make sure that everybody's heard. And then I think lastly was this idea of being, you know, the fact that I came from nowhere almost gives me this appreciation for everybody. And everybody's story at the same time. So they had, you know, I'm a faithful pastor. I'm a you know, a judge who loves our state and loves the rule of law. And I'm the father. I'm a dad and got two kids and wife and a dog. So all of those different things mean that I understand where my heart what Wisconsinites are really asking for and looking for in a justice who represents everyone.
Judge Everett Mitchell from Dane County, one of the candidates for state Supreme Court. Thank you so much, Your Honor, for joining us. We appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Pat, for having me this morning.
All right, there you go. There's our interview with Judge Everett Mitchell from Dane County. And a reminder that we will be talking to Judge Janet Protasiewicz coming up at 7:15. And if you want more information on voting, absentee ballot, are you even registered to vote? What more can you learn about what's on your ballot? Go to myvote.wi.gov. All right, we'll take a break here. And Kristen Lyerly is waiting in the wings to join us with much more on an Up North News radio show for this Monday. We'll be back.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
I wake up every morning and tell myself,
come on, hey, gorgeous.
Sometimes you gotta look in the mirror and say,
come on, hey, gorgeous.
So we cannot be accused of not paying attention when Dr. Lyerly makes a request. So there you go.
I can't believe you played that. That is so fun.
You said.
I did.
You said you wanted that to be your new theme. So there you are. So how are you?
Oh, I'm so good. Oh, I got a little sunshine. And I
You were out in California for a few days there.
Yeah, I spent some time in the desert. It was fantastic.
And still got up really early out there to join us last week. We appreciate that so much. But yeah, you were doing a little desert hiking.
Yeah, I went to Joshua Tree National Park, mm-hmm. which is the size of Rhode Island. It's huge. And it's two deserts that came together. It's the Mojave and the Colorado. They're totally different. We think, you know, up here we've got so much water and it's so lush. We just think like a desert. It's totally different. Unbelievable. Highly recommended.
Wow. Okay. And of course, Kristen, being an OBGYN, who normally gives us all kinds of good medical information on Thursday mornings, but decides to just prattle on with us on Monday. But being an OBGYN and my being married to one, I had to laugh that y'all were doing the same thing during Rihanna's halftime show yesterday. What were you doing?
Texting each other, trying to guess how pregnant she was.
Yes, well, you were all commenting on her appearance overall or on the music or on the dancers. They're doing gestational age chat behind the scenes here.
So we went with 24 weeks.
That's you went with 24 weeks. The person to whom I'm related by marriage, you know, guessed 4 months herself. So, you know, not that she's going to share that information with us. And it raised the question, and you could tell how awkward it is for all the men on social media, because we know. So as soon as Sherry texted me first saying she looks to be 4 months along, I right away was like, thank you, because I couldn't bring it up first. It's, you know, you go, hey, how pregnant are you? I'm not pregnant. Oh, so sorry. But
we even took it back to like, okay, we know she just had a baby.
Right.
So like at what point would she have likely gotten pregnant? Probably about 4 months postpartum. Like that's a pretty quick turnaround. So yeah. We're talking to each other about like cautioning each other about what could happen if you don't use protection mm-hmm. after you have a baby, because, you know, that's kind of a vulnerable time. Although I think she's rocking the mom thing. And if I had to guess, I think this was an intentional pregnancy.
I'm telling you, for however far along she seems to be, that was a physical show. I mean, not the most fit for those dancers. Talk about a physical show. Oh, I mean, wow. that is a workout, kids. But, you know, she wasn't just standing still herself. And so I thought the show went really well. I think that I can, you know, I'm now of an old enough age that I'm sure other people were like, oh, a little too much, you know, grabbing or this or that. But from a, you know, from a musical standpoint and from an overall production standpoint, that one's going to be up there.
Yeah. She's an outstanding performer and she's been around. I still think of Rihanna as kind of a new person, but she's been mm-hmm. around for like 15 years.
Yep. And the last thing on social media about the show was the number of Rihanna fans who puts up some kind of a meme or a gif of just crying or sadness or frustration and anger, because it's like, all right, she's pregnant. We are still not going to get another album from her anytime soon, because she hasn't done a tour. She hasn't done an album because she was having her first child. Now if she's having another one, no new music for a while yet. You're going to have to live off the greatest hits that you heard yesterday.
It's Sorry, people. She's rocking the mom thing right now. Let's let her do it.
Did you enjoy any of the either the commercials or things about the game yesterday, or were you not watching that closely?
You know, I have to say that I got back at about halftime, mm-hmm. and my kids had already thrown together a bunch of food, and there was a party happening at my house. So I walked into a party, and there was just a lot of conversation. So I didn't pay as close attention as I otherwise would have.
No, that's fine. I honestly haven't seen a list of what people think are the best ones. The one that I thought was really nice and well done. I mean, it wasn't even that great, but it was the NFL one for women playing flag football.
Oh yeah.
I don't remember her name, but she's running away from Aaron Andrews, which I thought was pretty cool playing along with that. Yes. And eventually avoids all these people and gets home to her mom and says, "Mom, you won't believe." And mom goes for her flag and she's got to start running all over again. And you know, then there was a nice tagline at the end of it. What's that, Aaron?
That one was pretty good. That's all I was going to say.
Yeah. There were some other good, obviously nothing that I even took a note on to share, but you know, It was good. I don't even know if you can do the days of blockbuster ads anymore, because now we're all so used to it. We've set the bar high. We're waiting for it. Where once upon a time, whether it was, Bud Light or, I mean, remember when E-Trade used to do all those commercials that were, I mean, they were just funny, but I don't know that anybody can naturally pull that off anymore during the Super Bowl.
Well, if they had another E-Trade Babies one, it was just boring. And played out.
See? Yeah. See, and we still... You know, that the E-Trade baby is still kind of an inside joke for us because of the one where the babies, the commercial ends with him, "You want to see my shocked face?" What? And so we still kind of use that. But otherwise, were you in any way curious about these unidentified flying objects that were shot down over the weekend, over Alaska, over Canada, and over Lake Huron?
Yeah,
with including by a contingent of folks from Wisconsin as well. So
that's kind of exciting. Yeah,
kind of exciting. We might be at war with aliens. We don't know. You know, it
just kept happening. I don't know. I kept seeing it pop up, and I was busy. I was distracted, so I wasn't paying too close attention. But yeah, I don't know. What? Tell us about it, Pat.
I'm not the first one to say this, but it does kind of have that feeling like the early minutes of a disaster movie where there's things happening. There's, you know, people are talking about things on TV, but we're all not really paying attention to it yet, you know? So the mothership hasn't shown up or anything like that. I mean, honestly, my completely uneducated opinion is that much like I thought the original one from China was not nearly so much about surveillance, but as about, how did somebody put it? Testing the fences, basically, you know, just seeing what can we get away with. And that it was almost kind of passive aggressive, like, okay, now we're going to throw these little things up and see if they find those. And you know, I just kind of feel like they're just messing with us for, you know.
I was just wondering, like, what are those things? Because all of the information we really got was, we just shot another thing out of the sky. We just shot another thing out of the sky, but they were different sizes. Like, what are we now shooting out of the sky so much? I don't understand. I need more information.
I know. No, we do. And I know they're going to be checking the debris and hopefully we'll find out more. But yeah, it does kind of have that. If I suddenly see Jeff Goldblum show up, you know, with Will Smith, they're seen walking into the White House or something, I'm going to be a little bothered. Hey, I wanted to ask you again. I know you've been away, but you're out there in Green Bay. But I saw something about that. Was there going to be a ban on like the Pride flag and other flags? And Mayor Eric Genrich helped defeat this motion. And you know, again, folks, if you're taking up time to divide us based on flags, could you just step down, please?
Yeah.
That's my feeling.
We've just got a couple city council members who just keep pushing back on progress and the future and the sense of community. And they find these little things. I mean, not that the Pride flag is a little thing. It's a really big deal. But they just find these little ways to be a thorn in the side of the progress of this community. And it's very frustrating. But luckily, the folks who live here stand up and use our voices and know the direction that we want to head in. So I see big things in the future of this community. We just have a few, you know, elders who maybe it's time to step down.
Maybe, because and that was one thing I kind of took issue with. Now, again, both Fox and the NFL, you know, love to wrap themselves up in the flag. And in so doing, sometimes find ways to cast aspersions on people who love the country just as much as everybody else, but think that things should go in a different direction. And it kind of cast, you know, protesters as somehow less American and less respectful of the flag, which, again, to me is just a reminder of that person's privilege. That they there's nothing they need to protest because they're getting everything that they want, you know, in life right now, and that they can't put themselves in somebody else's shoes, that they, again, have to make it sound like, you know, oh, we're wrapped in the flag. And, you know, we see it now with the what I would call the new McCarthyism committee. You know, it's instead of Joe McCarthy, now it's Kevin McCarthy. But that tinfoil hat committee, you know, that met late last week with Ron Johnson talking about all of his grievances. And there he was all over right-wing TV over the weekend again, you know, just the constant victimhood of somebody who is less a victim than perhaps anybody else we know in life.
He is just the poster boy for crazy. It's so weird. When you talk with people from all across the country, everybody knows who Ron Johnson is. Everybody knows how nutty he is. Mm-hmm. It's please just stop.
I can't wait till Friday when we talk to Mark Jacob about this. But, you know, just one other press critic, Jay Rosen, made clear that when we talk about these things, we have to put that perspective in that these are conspiracies and things, because as Jay writes, you know, clown car hearings, first off, I love that. Clown car hearing. Clown car hearings exploit a weakness in mainstream journalism source code, which gives no clear instructions for how to report truthfully on events that are themselves false, meaning they spring from a propagandistic intent, and taking them seriously just furthers the scam. Mm-hmm. And again, now, of course, you're going to get people going, oh, well, if you're going to show your bias if you call them out as being false. Yeah, bias toward the truth.
Yeah, they create their own reality. Like, no.
Yeah. Well, so now you've had your big trip to California. So now, I mean, you know me, I'm a big advocate of, you know, what's next. You always have to have that next thing to anticipate. Do you have other things ahead, or now is it going to be a long, dark rest of the winter for you?
Oh, no, there's so much. I mean, of course, you know, I'm working in Minnesota, so I've got a couple long shifts there. But in less than a month, I go to Washington, D.C. to gather with OBGYN advocates from all over the country and talk about what can we do to move the needle on women's health, not just with regards to abortion, but with physician payment and malpractice issues and so many other things associated with our ability to take care of our patients. It's my favorite conference of the year.
And of course, you helped connect us with the folks who are now part of Motherhood for Good. It is Motherhood Monday. And so Nicole Slavin and Kate Duffy will join us at 7:30. And their topic is going to be the state Supreme Court race and what busy moms need to know about it. And I don't think we can talk about things like that nearly enough.
Seriously. And, you know, again, shout out to moms, Rihanna, Nicole, Kate, like moms getting together, having these conversations. We care about the future for our children, and we're distracted. We're busy. There's so much happening. So it's great to be able to message on the level that we can understand it so that we can progress, you know, move things forward.
Mm-hmm. So look for that. And again, Motherhood for Good is the group, formerly Moms for Mandela, and looking forward to talking to them at 7:30. And do you know yet? Can you tease us yet with Hometown Health this week and what we'll hear on Thursday?
Oh, I sure can. It's going to be really interesting. So we're going to talk about what's happening in Beloit. There's this very interesting grassroots air monitoring project that Brittany Keys and Pablo Torrell are going to tell us about how this all came to be, what their inspiration was, who didn't know each other, how they came together and decided to do some really important work, figuring out what's happening with the air and how this affects the folks who live in Beloit. And then where do we go from there? I think it's going to be really enlightening.
That is very interesting. I know that when sand plants were going up around here all over the place, that was a big topic of discussion, was air monitoring. Mm-hmm. And that it was so important to start that right away to get a baseline reading so that later on it couldn't be said, well, you say these things are polluting, but, you know, compared to what? And so, you know, as a scientist, it's always good to take measurements, you know, whenever, data. So that you can build trends, so that you can have data. So that will be very interesting to hear how, you know, at one hometown level, we work on taking care of our health throughout an mm-hmm. entire community. I'm guessing you're again okay with hanging around and talking about this day in music and history and all the fun stuff.
That's why I show up on Mondays.
I know. The rest of this is just the price of admission to have to talk to me for a few minutes to get into it. That's all coming up after this. You're up north.
I ain't talking about getting no hair and makeup. No. I'm talking about soon as I wake up. My second morning.
Second morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
Can you see by the dawn's early light?
Say what you will about Whitney Houston, but it was actually Marvin Gaye who first reinvented the national anthem. That was him at the 1983 NBA All-Star Game on this day in music history, February 13th, 1983. It was a bit controversial at the time. It was rather unorthodox. But again, like so many other things, it seems new and strange at first. And then it grows on you. And you see, you saw the way what Whitney Houston and her team did was just amazing. Kristen, you said you were traveling. You probably missed Chris Stapleton's national anthem rendition yesterday at the Super Bowl.
Oh, I did miss it.
It was really good. It was.
You
it
don't
was
even like Chris Stapleton. I mean, he's not your favorite.
Well, no, Of the few country music stars I know, he is definitely one of them. So, no, I like him well enough, you know, and I thought he did a really nice job yesterday. Mm-hmm. All right, more music history on this day in 1967. Hold on, Kristen, did you play 45s or are you too young? You only played cassettes and CDs?
Oh, for sure. I played 45s. I played everything.
Okay, good. It was on this day in 1967. If you bought a brand new 45 that came on, it was the Beatles with Strawberry Fields Forever on the one side, Penny Lane on the flip side. I wanted to play Penny Lane instead, but I know we've played it a couple of times already, and it's just, that's one of my favorites. Strawberry Fields was obviously the bigger song there. On this very same day that 45 came out from the Beatles, a new brand new singer on the scene named Dolly Parton released her first album called Hello, I'm Dolly. Yeah, we know a thing or two about her.
Mm-hmm.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Dolly Parton.
You know.
Go up a couple of years to 1971, and the new number one song was this one from the Osmonds. I am pretty sure that Donny Osmond cannot hit that note quite that high yet, but...
But does he still have his purple socks on?
Oh, I'm sure he does. There's things you can't ever get rid of, and Donny and his purple wardrobe,
that whole variety show with ice skating and... Oh
God, yeah. The Donny and Marie show, yes. Watched it every single week. They just don't make TV like that anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not passing judgment. I'm just saying they don't make TV like that anymore. On this day in 1970, Black Sabbath released their first ever album. It was self-titled Black Sabbath. It was a Friday the 13th of February back then in 1971. Peter Tork of the Monkees was born on this day in 1942. He passed away 3 years ago. And Peter Gabriel has a birthday today he would be 73 years old today. I forgot to do the math. 1996 on this day, Tupac's album All Eyes on Me was released. It was the first rap double album to be released on a major label and sold over 10 million copies in the U.S.
All eyes on me. You know what? I bet you got it twisted. You don't know who to trust. So many player hating.
This is one of the things where, again, I look back and I go, how did I miss this? This is good. Where was I during this? And chances are I was listening to Donnie and Marie at about that point. You know?
Still in 1996. Probably.
Yeah, you've met me. Also on this day in 1996, the Fugees released their second and final album, The Score. The album was also a major landmark in hip hop and has this one that is still my favorite version. I actually prefer this one over Roberta Flack, Killing Me Softly. Tell you what, Kristen, I'm so confident that you and I will never be in a karaoke bar together that I'll tell you right now, that'll be my karaoke song if I'm in.
I have actually a very long karaoke list, and I'm putting it in there with a little asterisk and Pat Kreitlow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I'm sure I'll remember saying that when you remind me of it.
And I will.
Australian Prime Minister Kevin Rudd on this day in 2008 made a major and historic apology to the Indigenous Australians and the Stolen Generations. On this day 2 years ago, a major winter storm caused blackouts in Texas and northern Mexico and killed at least 82 people. A lot of folks think it was a lot more than that. And, you know, showed again how Texas Governor Greg Abbott and Republicans had completely blundered management of the Texas infrastructure, and well, yet they're still there. So go figure.
That's so frustrating.
I know. On this day in 1919 was the birth of country singer Tennessee Ernie Ford, famous for this little ditty.
When you load 16 tons, what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me?
Which leads to Pat telling a story about his prom.
To the company.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Who performed at my prom? Tennessee Ernie Ford and Florence Henderson. Mom from the Brady Bunch, Carol Brady.
They performed at your prom?
Well, more like kind of, sort of. See, that was the days of the old Carlton Celebrity Dinner Theater and in Bloomington, Minnesota. And I graduated from Apple Valley High School, class of 82. And our prom was at the Carlton Celebrity Dinner Theater. We were in a separate ballroom type area where they had a heavy metal band playing. But before you, because 1982, that's what you got for your prom band, was heavy metal bands, apparently. But the dinner was, you're in the dinner theater. And the show started while all of us were still eating dinner. So we go from having, you know, just your typical, you know, steak dinner, mass produced, you know, in this big celebrity theater with all kinds of people the same age as our grandparents. And we're listening to Tennessee Ernie Ford and Florence Henderson. And then we have to make our way down this corridor to hear some other really bad band, which we did not really stay for that. My ex-girlfriend and me. I say
plans?
Ex because she'd broken up with me the week before, but we agreed to go to prom together anyway because she'd already paid for the dress and I'd already paid for the tickets. Awkward.
Sorry.
But hey, I got a story out of it. So you know.
And I mean, you saw Tennessee Ernie Ford and Florence Henderson.
I know.
In real life.
Yes. Carol Brady, you know, singing and in this, glitzy, you know, gown with the old pea picker, as Tennessee Ernie Ford used to call himself. And I'm almost embarrassed that I know all that. You got a prom story for us before we go?
No, I don't.
Come on. I will say this, my former co-anchor here in Eau Claire, we were, you know, swapping prom stories and everything. And here's how things change. You know, she is now so well known around Eau Claire, so well respected. Everybody loves her. But if you ask her prom story, it'll be that back in high school, you know, again, she was kind of nerdly like a lot of us, and nobody asked her to prom. So she was the coat check girl at her own prom. Look at her now, huh? Look at her now. So yeah. Just remember that. Whatever y'all went through at 18 or whatever, it's okay. It gets better. Look at Kristen. look at me. It could only go better from there. Thank you, Dr. Lyerly. We'll see you Thursday.
So good to spend the morning with you, Pat.
All right. Have a great day.
You too.
So much more in our next hour, including Judge Janet Protasiewicz. You're up north.